We're going to call this special meeting of the Board of Regents to order. Mr. Gould, would you please call the roll?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Regent Carter.
Here.
Regent Carvalho.
Here.
Regent Del Carlo.
Here.
Vice Chair Dubrava.
Here.
Chair Geddes.
Here.
Regent Hayes.
Here.
Regent McAdoo.
Here.
Regent McMichael.
Here.
Regent Moran. Regent Page. Regent Perkins.
Here.
Regent Trachuk.
Here.
We have a quorum, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Gould. We'll now go to the Pledge of Allegiance. Regent McAdoo has a festive flag there, so I'd ask her to lead us all in the pledge.
All right. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much, Regent McAdoo. Now we'll go to item number one, public comment of Mr. Gould.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We did not receive any voicemail public comment for this meeting. We did receive four online forms, which I will now read into the record. The first one was from Angela Brown, B-R-O-W-N. Her public comment is as follows. I am currently a graduate research student at UNLV. I applied for UNLV because of academic research, scholars education program, and for its service to the community. I am fortunate to receive an undergraduate degree in education from UNLV and conduct graduate research to include in academic journals, as well as become a Royal Fellow researcher amongst ORCID researchers. That's the end of that public comment. The second public comment is from Janice McKay, M-C-K-A-Y. Chancellor Riley and Board of Regents Chair Geddes recently emailed UNLV faculty and staff about the possibility of moving the presidential search forward to July. When the search was initially changed from spring to fall of 2020, it was believed that by then we would be able to conduct a normal on-campus search. This is no longer the case. The continued uncertainty surrounding the virus has altered many things, not just for UNLV, but for all colleges and universities. The Faculty Senate Executive Committee is fully supportive of moving our search forward to July for the following reasons. Other colleges and universities are no longer waiting to hire new administrators. In fact, some people have already been hired with searches conducted completely remotely. Our current finalist pool has high quality candidates who are also competitive in other national searches, and we risk losing them if we wait. Other searches, such as for the Vice President for Philanthropy and Alumni Engagement, have been delayed until the presidential search is completed, and the firm for that search is also very concerned about losing the best candidates for that open position. The search for a permanent provost has also been pushed back. It is unlikely that a fall search would be fully in person. The ENCHI and UNLV town halls and the past two Senate meetings have yielded attendance that was double or even triple the usual number of participants. Part of this has to do with the concerns over COVID-19, but we also believe that it is much more convenient for faculty to participate. We are hopeful that this would be true for the presidential search as well. There is not a perfect solution here. Moving the search forward means that faculty will have to use time normally devoted to research or creative activities for university service. Additionally, we are already losing much of this time because of the work required to move our classes online in a way that will best serve our students. The Faculty Senate Executive Committee weighed all of these points and were ultimately in agreement that moving forward seems like the safest and best option for us. We know and understand this is a tough call, and there will be some who disagree, but to protect UNLV's presidential search and candidates, we felt it was the right thing to do. Finally, we would like to thank President Miana for her dedication to UNLV and for the difficult work she has been doing for all of us. UNLV has greatly benefited from her intelligent and savvy leadership. As this is my final Board of Regents meeting as chair, I would also like to personally thank Chancellor Riley, President Miana, Chair Geddes, and the entire Board of Regents for all that you do. I have really enjoyed my time working with you. Thank you. The third public comment is from Kent Ervin, E-R-V-I-N. Public comment from Kent Ervin as a faculty member at UNR and a member of the Nevada Faculty Alliance regarding item 5, the code changes to allow furloughs. I appreciate that NSHE must make code changes now to allow furloughs on fiscal year 2021 contracts starting July 1 in case that the governor mandates the higher 10% or 14% levels of budget cuts. This is a difficult situation, and we will all need to make sacrifices. Many Nevadans have lost their jobs, including family members of faculty and other state employees who are now relying solely on their state job incomes. Modest furloughs are, of course, preferable to layoffs if they cannot be avoided. However, I am concerned that the language of the first paragraph slash sentence in section 5.4.12 has no limit on the number of furlough days that could be imposed. As written, this could allow contracts to be reduced to the equivalent of a layoff without the usual contractual safeguards in the code for due process. If this item is passed as presented, the intent of the board needs to be made absolutely clear that it is only for the purpose of very limited furloughs at the overall 2.3% or 4.6% levels in the budgets that were submitted by NSHE to the governor. Thank you. And the fourth public comment was submitted by Savannah Baltera, B-A-L-T-E-R-A. This letter is in response to your recent communication with the UNLV community regarding the search for our university's new president. We are in full agreement with your reasoning to move up the search timeline and hold campus interviews during July rather than at the end of August. That said, we would like to communicate an important request from the UNLV Administrative Faculty Committee and the UNLV Classified Staff Council regarding the upcoming interviews. When the finalist interviews were initially scheduled in March, the compressed timeline required 4 candidates to be interviewed over the course of 2 days. Although we understand the need for the restricted interview schedule in the past when we had no alternative options, we would like to request a more comprehensive interview process going forward. The selection of the new UNLV president will likely be the most important university hiring decision we will make within the next decade. Our two committees have had wonderful working relationships with current President Miana, but we are all aware of her decision not to seek the permanent position. She has done a tremendous job moving the university forward while she has been in the role and setting a strong foundation for her successor to lead UNLV to the next level. We have the opportunity to hire someone who will be a true force for good at the university and help us achieve our strategic goals. We owe it to ourselves, to our local community, and to the entire state to properly vet all the candidates and make the best possible decision. If the interviews are again scheduled to take place over 2 or 3 days, this will provide very limited opportunity for us to reflect on our meetings with the finalists and to reach out to our colleagues at their home institutions to find out if they have presented their authentic selves to the UNLV community. We want our new president to have a long-term commitment to our campus and not simply seek to use the UNLV presidency as a stepping stone to find a new role in several years' time. We feel strongly that each candidate needs to have at least 2 days of meetings with various campus stakeholder groups. We respectfully ask that you schedule time not only for meetings with broad categories of UNLV community members, such as academic faculty, administrative faculty, and classified staff, but also specific times for meetings with the Administrative Faculty Committee and the Classified Staff Council. When Regent Lieberman visited our campus to discuss the search last fall, he said that he wanted the UNLV campus to decide who our next president will be. He expressed a desire to have the entire campus actively involved with and engaged in the search. We couldn't agree more with this sentiment and know there is keen interest in the search and its outcome. Therefore, we need to provide adequate opportunities for our community members to meet the candidates and provide their input. Thank you very much for your consideration of this request. If you have any questions or require additional information from us, we would be glad to speak with you at any time. Thank you. Signed, the UNLV Administrative Faculty Committee and Classified Staff Council. Mr. Chair, that is the end of public comment that's been submitted for today. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gould. We will now go on to item two, the chair's report. I have a few items here to address. First off, on behalf of the entire board, I'd like to welcome Lisa Levine. The governor notified us yesterday that he's appointed her to finish out Regent Lieberman's term in District 5. I know she's listening in, and she will be meeting with staff next week to get up to speed, and will be joining us for our June 11th and 12th meeting. And speaking of the June meeting, we're going to do the June meeting, as you've seen and noticed, as a hybrid meeting. The governor has extended the allowance to not have a public meeting place or public comment through June 30th. But what we're going to do for the June 11th and 12th meeting is we will open up System Administration Las Vegas, System Administration Reno, and the Great Basin College campus offices for an interactive video that will also be linked into BlueJeans. And for the three offices that are open, I would ask Regents to attend the office that's in the city you're in. Same with the presidents and cabinet members can also attend in that. But anybody who's not comfortable coming into the office is still welcome to participate through the BlueJeans link. If that's more convenient or it's just easier for you, we'll continue to do that. But we will have the three offices open up for that limited group with proper social spacing and cleaning of the offices around there. Those three locations are also open to the three representative groups, the faculty senates, student senates, and classified employee council. Their primary representative is allowed to go to one of those sites. Just one other note on the June 11th and 12th meeting is item number 27, the Main Station Farm Conservation Easement, has been withdrawn. It still shows up on the agenda because it was withdrawn after staff finalized the agenda, but that will be coming back most likely at the September meeting. In regards to COVID-19, just so we're all clear how the activities are going since the shutdown and with the plans to reopen, those decisions are being made at the campus level. So the campuses, under the direction of the president, are making the timelines and the decisions and the recommendations going forward as far as how their campuses will open and procedures that are taking place. And that is the authority that we have delegated to the presidents. It is it makes the most sense, especially in this situation, because, you know, every campus is different and every community is different, and how COVID-19 has impacted their communities are different. And, you know, we're looking at different amounts of people being infected and different restrictions in Clark County versus Washoe County versus the rest of the state. The plans for reopening are being developed at that campus level, and every president has a campus advisory group that is advising them on those activities. The presidents meet with the chancellor at the Council of Presidents every week, and they update the chancellor as to their activities and what is going on their campuses. And then the chancellor shares that with board leadership, and we communicate that with the governor's office so that we're in constant communication with the governor and his plans for reopening. Recently, the chancellor's created a system task force that really its job for the COVID-19 reopening is to take that 30,000 foot view and to look at all of the 8 institution campus plans and to make sure that we are coordinating and that they are in conformance with the governor's directives and the CDC's directives. And if there are any things in their plan that are missing, that those things will be addressed at the campus level and brought back forward. Dean Gould has been appointed to that role, and what Dean is doing there, besides helping out with the legal advice, is going through all the issues and the items in all the campus plans to see what would require board action and what would require be required to come back to us so that we can make changes as needed, similar to what we've done at the April 10th, May 8th, and what we'll be discussing later today, specific issues that we need to do to address the campus and the reopening. And then the chancellor and I continue to meet with the legislators and the federal delegation, and we update them on where we are since the shutdown and what we're doing as far as reopening and the policy changes that the board has taken, and potential issues that may be coming up based on the policy decisions. I will also note that the chancellor and I and CFL Klinger will be going to the Legislative Committee on Education on June 16th and giving them an update as far as all of our campus activities and campus plans for reopening. I will also note that General Counsel Reynolds presented earlier this week to the Legislative Committee on Redistricting, and he gave them an update on where we are, what our district current districts look like, and what the projections are based on the most recent census data. It was noted at that meeting, if you haven't seen, that due to the COVID shutdown, the census is going to be late, and they will not be able to perform redistricting during the 2021 session. So they're looking at a fall special session. They don't expect the final numbers until July or August. So they're looking at a fall special session to do redistricting, and Joe will be updating that timeline as we get more information and be presenting that at his next update. In regards to the chancellor search, last week, Search Chair Del Carlo and I, with Chief Staff Gould and the chancellor, interviewed the 12 semifinalists and narrowed it down to a finalist pool. The search firm is doing their due diligence on the finalist pool. And then later today, Chair Del Carlo and I will be meeting with Mr. Gould and Chancellor Riley to talk about logistics of the search and how we do the campus forums and the search committee meetings. Those campus forums are currently scheduled for June 15th and 16th, with the search committee scheduled for 17th and the morning of the 18th, if necessary, and then the special board meeting the afternoon of June 18th. And all of those candidates, as I mentioned, will be posted and announced on June 9th. And then finally, just the housekeeping. Remember, if you have questions or comments on any of the items, if the regents could text Dean, all others, please text Winner, and then they will text me and we'll get you in the queue for questions and comments. And with that, we will go to item number three, Councilor Riley.
Thanks, Chair Geddes, and hello, everybody on the board. Good morning, virtually. Just to follow up on some of the comments that Chair Geddes made, we have been briefing with the legislators. Our goal is to meet with every legislator. We probably have met with 25 thus far. But, you know, a couple themes of that, too, is we've been receiving really good feedback. One common theme that we've been receiving is that the Board of Regents have been the most transparent about the budget reduction plans, not only through its meetings, through distributing them widely with the media and with legislators. And just to let you know, as we're getting a lot of kudos about that, on how transparent we have been about discussing our budget reduction scenarios. We've also, another common theme we're hearing is that the board has been very proactive. They've communicated just during the whole pandemic, have made decisive decisions, and have made decisions that really have assisted students as they transition to the issue of the remote. So kudos to the board. We're getting some recognition. But finally, we're also getting recognition of how our students and faculty and staff have been out there, right? You can't talk about testing in this state without knowing that UNLV and UNR are leading the efforts. The recent appointment of Dr. Pandori at the Public Health Lab in UNR is a good example. The state asking us to put the proposal together on contact tracing, which I sent to each of you from the summary we had at one of our council presidents meeting, underscores the confidence that the state has in our leadership. I mean, we have tremendous leadership at our campus on these issues. And not only are we relying on them, but also the state is relying on them. And it's not to go unnoticed that, we have lent some of our staff, and some of our staff have joined the governor's office, whether that's Caleb Cage, who's now leading the emergency management, to Megan Mullaney, who's leading the communication teams. As I mentioned to Dr. Pandori, is that there's a lot of confidence in our leadership moving forward. So, again, I want to give a kudos and shout out to the board, because I think all the good work is being recognized, as well as how well our faculty and staff have been handling the pandemic. Just a quick follow-up on Chair Getty's issues. We continue to meet every week with the presidents to talk about reopening, to share information with each other. Next Wednesday, each of the campuses will be sharing their preliminary plans about reopening in the fall. As Chair Geddes has mentioned, we have an internal task force made up of education, medical, and public safety experts that are reviewing all those plans, ensuring not only, one, that they're in guidance with CDC and the governor's directive, but we're not missing stuff. As we have communicated to you earlier, is that under phase one, we were able to begin opening our CTE labs. All those labs will be open by July 1 at all four of our campuses. The task force will also be looking at providing system-wide guidance on issues, particularly around testing, COVID testing, antibody testing, when we might use thermo detection, who would pay for those tests. If someone tests positive, what does that mean? Facial coverings, contact tracing, et cetera. So we have uniformity. Each of the campuses on their fall reopening plans, again, are refining them, discussing, consulting, is that we ask that they have all those plans in ASAP, but no later than July 1. That basically just summarizes my main report. As Chair Geddes has mentioned, we're also in constant contact with our federal delegation around the CARES dollars, around the issue of liability insurance as we begin to reopen, and to look at any type of additional stimulus package that may look at retraining dollars for the state. I'd like to end on the issue, as I did send you some correspondence that we sent over and working with the governor's office about a plan that we in Nevada State, NCHE can take the lead on retraining Nevadans. We are poised to do that. Particularly at our community colleges and elsewhere, and we're looking forward to work with the governors to roll out and really promote, with federal dollars, state dollars, or others, a plan to retrain many individuals in Nevada. And with that, I conclude my report, Chair Geddes.
Thank you, Chancellor. We will now move to item number 4, the UNLV president search. As you can see in the agenda item there, what we wanted to do was get input and feedback from the board as far as accelerating that search. As is noted there, we had a finalist pool identified before the shutdown. We'd originally scheduled to start these up as soon as school started at the end of August. But because of the, as was in the public comment there, some of these candidates are in other searches, and some of the other searches at UNLV are on hold until we finish this one. So in talking to the search consultants and in consulting with the chair of the UNLV search, Regent Hayes, as well as the Faculty Senate and student government at UNLV, they all thought it would be appropriate to go ahead and accelerate this search into July. And we just wanted to get input and feedback from the board. If you had any questions, comments, concerns, suggestions in that regard, Chancellor, did you want to add anything?
I would just like to add, we did consult with both the present and future faculty senate chairs and student leaders, and they're in full support. I'm excited about the poll that we have. We have four really good candidates who I think the board's going to be in a tough position of making some decisions here. We don't want to lose those. As other institutions move forward on hiring presidents, a couple of them are actually involved in other searches. So I think we would be best to move that forward, particularly with the support of faculty and students. Thank you.
Thank you. Regent Hayes, did you have anything to add?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I support this. I had talked to the Chancellor and Chair Geddes about it. I've read the letters from the Faculty Senate, the classified staff, the administrative staff, the students. The letter we got yesterday from the administrative faculty and classified staff, I really appreciate the sentiment of it, and I will discuss with Chair Geddes and the Chancellor how we can do that. But while many things are opening, I don't think we're going to be back to business as usual by July. So I'm not sure how we incorporate their request of having more kind of side meetings and meetings with different constituencies in this COVID world that we're in currently. If there is a way to do it, or if they have suggestions, I encourage them to reach out if they have suggestions of how to do it. I can't think of a way, but that doesn't mean there isn't a great way to do it. As has been mentioned, we are potentially losing quality candidates out there. I hate that we can't do this on campus where all the different constituency groups can have a chance to meet with these candidates. But the positive outcome we've had from several of the town halls on the different campuses around the state. We've had greater participation through some of these virtual town halls than we ever had of in-person meetings. So I think in a way we'll actually get greater reach and more people will be able to hear what these candidates have to say and to be a part of the interviews virtually. So I do support this I think it's the best way to move forward.
Thank you, Regent Hayes. I have Regent McAdoo, Vice Chair DeBrava, then Regent Pades. Regent McAdoo.
Good morning. I just wanted to throw in my support for that. I think reasons for accelerating the search far outweigh reasons for waiting. So I just wanted to voice that. Thank you.
Thank you. Vice Chair DeBrava.
Thank you, Chair Geddes. I just wanted to echo the comments that have already been made. I would be supportive of moving the search to accelerate it to the July date. Thank you.
Sorry, I lost control mute for a moment. Thank you. We have Regent Page, then Regent Carvalho, then Regent Del Carlo. Regent Page.
Thank you, Chair Geddes. I agree with all the comments, but I'm curious why we don't even push it up earlier than toward the end of July and not move it up closer to the beginning of July. If these candidates are in other searches and they're moving forward, we'd still have a risk of losing them.
I think the quick response is looking at the search consultants and the staff availability and our ability to get them there. I think that was the earliest dates we could get it. But we can continue to look at that, see if there are other options.
Yeah, I would make that suggestion. Maybe just look at, if we can maybe move it up just a little sooner would be, I think, preferred. Thanks.
Thank you, Regent Page. I have Regent Carvalho, then Del Carlo, then Trachuk. Regent Carvalho.
Thank you, Chair Geddes. I would echo my colleague's sentiment that I agree with moving up the search. And I would echo what Regent Page just mentioned, that if we can do it any sooner, that would be great. I also think that these virtual town halls have been a huge success and have lended themselves to greater input and shared governance, really. And so if we can have the candidates participate in some virtual town halls, I think that would be a very good compromise to being able to get their input and have participation from all stakeholders involved. Thank you.
Thank you. Regent Del Carlo?
Thank you, Chair Geddes. I'm in full support of this. We started these searches months ago. The chancellor search was started in January. It's almost June. And, you know, the world isn't stopping, even though we're going in a different pace. So I totally support this. And, yeah, I think we should go the fastest as we can, because really those good candidates get picked up quickly.
Thank you, Regent Del Carlo. I have Regent Trachok, then Perkins. Regent Trachok.
Thank you, Chair. I support moving forward with all due haste with the search.
Thank you. Regent Perkins.
I guess all I can say is ditto. I did notice with the town halls, there was much more participation with the town halls. So I think that will kind of offset the ability to meet with them in person. So, yes, absolutely, I would support this.
Thank you. I'm seeing no other comment. I will note that we have upped the license for Blue Jeans, so we can now go to 500 people participating at a time, and we can even go higher if necessary. And with this technology, we can actually run simultaneous town halls. So we're working with SES and staff to see all opportunities that we have there for these searches going forward. And I would concur with the earlier comments. We're getting great participation in this format. Seeing no other comment, thank you. The chancellor and I will take your input and talk with Regent Hayes and work out the timelines with the search consultant. Thank you very much. We will go to item number 5, code amendments to authorize furloughs in response to COVID-19 emergency budget shortfall. Chief General Counsel Reynolds.
Thank you, Chair Geddes. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
This is Joe Reynolds, INSHE Chief General Counsel. This agenda item is presented to the board to enact 3 amendments to Title 2 of the code. Some of the context of this agenda item, I think the board is aware, back in April 3rd of this year, the Governor's Office of Finance requested that the board submit a plan regarding 6%, 10%, and up to 14% cuts, specifically related to budget shortfalls projected regarding the COVID-19 pandemic. The board voted to submit a plan to the governor's office, and on the threshold of the 10% and the 14% potential cuts, contemplated either a half day or a full day furlough. Our current code provisions were drafted more than a decade ago, more in context of the Great Recession, and there were some concerns legally about the ability of the board pursuant to the code to enact furloughs. And so we've drafted changes that will allow that to occur at the board's discretion. Some of the key provisions of this remove the requirement that there be a financial exigency declared. Will allow the board to enact furloughs either upon legislative direction or gubernatorial direction. The prior code provisions only allowed for legislative direction. The intent of these new provisions, and I think it's important to note because both Chancellor Riley and myself have met with the faculty senate chairs and also spoken with NFA and Mr. Irvin, is to be a temporary provision. And we have limited the scope of the furloughs that can be enacted by the board to fiscal year 21 only. That begins on July 1st of this year. And just to clarify for the record, there is no intent by these code provisions to impact any other current rights or provisions that are in the code regarding notice of non-reappointment, or any other matters, and that these code changes are tailored to specifically allow the board options in how to address budget shortfalls regarding the COVID-19 pandemic, specifically included COVID-19 in these to really try to make them limited. I've also modeled provisions regarding notice to faculty members and also some limited procedures for reconsideration of any furlough decision. Those are largely modeled after existing code procedures regarding the imposition of furloughs. And would also, again, like to just note for the board that these do not contemplate layoffs or other salary reductions. They are also being proposed to the board under an emergency code enactment. Generally, code amendments require two readings, often 30 days apart. These are being proposed and would become effective upon enactment by the board if they are approved. They would require subsequent ratification by the board on a future agenda item within the 120 days of them being effective. And also to note with respect to the board regarding timing, system contracts for employees automatically renew on July 1st, the beginning of each fiscal year. And so one of the reasons for the board to have this on a special agenda is to get these in place prior to the new contracts becoming effective. And I'd just like to note, if nobody can see me, my computer decided to do an emergency update. And so you lost video. So that's why you can only hear my voice right now. And I'd be happy to answer any questions that the board may have.
And thank you. And Regents, if you'd like to make motions or seconds, just text Dean and get in the queue. And Chancellor Riley, you wanted to add something?
Yeah. First of all, I want to thank Joe Reynolds for his great work on this. I also want to thank the Faculty Senate, who we continually consult with and offer sound advice and good advice. I just want to respond to the one issue about the cap, because we had long conversations with the faculty, Joe Reynolds and myself. And, my recommendation to the board is that I would be concerned about putting a higher cap at this point and signaling to the governor's office of the legislature that we can actually go higher than what the board has already agreed to, the 2.3 and the 4.6% at the 10 and 14% level. I think a cap that's higher, particularly at a time when the legislature hasn't met to discuss furloughs, I'm not sure that would be a wise move. I will note, and as I noted to the Faculty Senate, if we alter this in any way on any of the furloughs, we will consult with the Faculty Senate. We will consult with faculty. We will bring them in. And that has been the practice of this board. The board has not tried to slip anything by or to alter any policies without full, robust involvement of our Faculty Senate, who we value as part of our shared governance. Thank you.
Thank you. I have a motion to approve from Vice Chair DuBrava. Do I have a second?
Second
from Regent Trachuk. Brian Frost, you wanted to make a comment? Brian? You may be muted.
There we go. Sorry, I was trying to unmute. Brian Frost, Faculty Senate Chair, University of Nevada. I do appreciate all of the comments from the Chancellor and from Councillor Reynolds on this. I think the Senate chairs do have concern about a lack of a cap. It's our understanding that as Joe mentioned, the current code 5.4.5 allows for up to 6% annual furloughs for up to 2 years to be implemented due to statewide legislative action. And so I guess the question I have for the board is, and this goes along with what Chancellor Riley was just saying, is it the intention of this board that these proposed additions to the code, this 5.4.12, would follow this same cap?
Mr. Reynolds?
Joe Reynolds, for the record, to respond to Mr. Frost's question, there is not a cap or a specific limitation in these code amendments. And to be clear, there is no 6% or other limitation. That would be whether the board wanted to impose a half furlough day, one furlough day, or more than that is something that these amendments allow the board the discretion to do.
So if I can just follow up on that, I think, we certainly appreciate the desire to have flexibility, but the lack of a cap in the very short notice that is allowable for the implementation of the furloughs in this code, 10-day notice is all you get. I really feel compelled to ask that a cap be added here that would provide some flexibility for NG and our institutions, but also provide a limit to the impacts on the students, our mission, and the faculty. So I would ask that we consider modifying the proposal to read that the Board of Regents may authorize any NG institution and or system administration and its units to implement no more than 2 monthly furlough days or half days for academic and administrative faculty, and to reduce the faculty member salary to reflect the furlough days for all or any portion of 2021. So that is to replace one or more monthly furlough days with no more than 2 furlough days.
And Dr. Frost, I would respectfully disagree. I understand the concern. I think, as the chancellor pointed out, we have not taken any of these budget actions without consulting with the faculty, and any furlough would have to be approved by this board. So at an open public meeting, this board would discuss and determine, and if we weren't comfortable with more than 2 days, that would be a decision of this board. And as Mr. Reynolds pointed out, this is a 120-day emergency provision, so that we have flexibility going into the July 1 date. This will have to come back to the board within 120 days for further discussion. And if it looks like we have issues, it's something we could just discuss at that point, as well as discussing at the point where we're discussing furloughs in line with the state. And I would just add in, Regent Page and Vice Chair DuBravo will remember, in 2011, we put some votes in place to restrict what the board could do budgetarily. And we had to rescind those at the next meeting because we could not meet the legislative and governor's mandates with the restrictions in place. So I think it's best to do this now and then see the direction we get back from the governor and legislature and have further discussions as it evolves. I'm not seeing anybody else in the queue there. Regent Carvalho.
Thank you, Chair Geddes. I have a question for Mr. Reynolds. Will there be there will be an announcement or some sort of other discussion from the board that we will implement a specific furlough? Is that correct?
Joe Reynolds, for the record, yes, Regent Carvalho, as Chair Geddes, I just mentioned, this allows the board the authority pursuant to the code that's referenced in all employees' contracts. There would need to be another agendized board meeting and discussion on exactly what the furlough policy may be, and would defer to Chief of Staff Gould or Chair Geddes on when that would occur, and Chancellor Riley.
Chair Geddes, could I add to that, please?
Yes.
And I would just like to add, too, is that the only furlough policy proposal that the board has entertained at this time has been what we submitted to the governor's office, and that was at the 10% level, the 2.3 or 6 days per year, and the 14% level or 1 day per month. That is all this board – anything that even implementing that, this would come back to the board, but any change the board would have to take action with.
Thank you. Regent Del Carlo.
Thank you, Chair Geddes. I have a question for Joe Reynolds and a comment. Council Reynolds, we have not at all talked about, let me rephrase that. We have until July 1st to make provisions, right? And so if we don't talk until after July 1st, say, I know a lot of institutions are their highest earners are taking cuts, like 10% cuts, just to show a good faith. If we don't talk about that between now and July 1st, then we can't talk about something like that. Is that correct?
Joe Reynolds, for the record, not necessarily Regent Del Carlo. What these code provisions, again, are all employee contracts incorporate Title II of the handbook and in the code to govern the terms of the employee's employment for the upcoming fiscal year. And so by these code changes, it will place all those contract renewals and all those employees on constructive notice, at least, and on legal notice that the board may, at its discretion, implement these furloughs during the at any time during the upcoming fiscal year. You know, whether that actual policy decision occurs between now and July 1st or after July 1st is something I think that's in the board's discretion. But these changes also don't allow for the board to impose furloughs any sooner than July 1st of this year. And I hope that answers your question.
Okay. And my comment was just that it's certainly not our intention to ever want to even furlough one day, but with what's going on, and then we're not going to know until that special August session. So I agree that we can't really put a cap on anything right now. And what we've got is going to suffice until we know our figures better in August. So, and you know, it only takes, I forget how many days to have a special session. And with the technology we have, it really makes it easy to meet. And we'll meet as frequent. I would think we'd meet as frequently as we need to, because, you know, I'm afraid come August, we've got some sobering news, worse than what we already know. Just, I'm not, and I'm very much a positive person, but things are not good. Thank you.
Thank you, Regent Del Carlo. And I would concur that we need maximum flexibility. We still haven't gotten feedback from the governor's office or the legislature on what they intend to do. And again, this only applies to fiscal year 21, and anything we would have to do would have to come back to the board, and we would all have to decide what is an appropriate furlough level. And then next June, this board would have to determine if they want to keep this policy or move away from it. So, Regent McAdoo.
Thank you, Chair Geddes. I feel compelled to say to the faculty and administration, staff, students, and my fellow regents that I understand your concern. I lived through the furlough when my husband was employed at UNR. However, as your regents, and I'm in my fourth year now, I fully understand we have to make hard decisions all the time. But I do not believe that we make those decisions without taking into account our faculty, our students, the administration at the institutions, NSHE as a whole, higher education in Nevada as a whole. So I would offer just on my own thinking about this is, as we have to make those decisions, all of you that I just named are utmost in my mind as I consider what we have to do. So we're in this together. We've heard that now for the last few months, but it's an absolute true statement. Thank you.
Thank you, Regent McAdoo. Seeing no other comment, Mr. Gould, will you do a roll call vote?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Regent Carvalho.
Aye.
Regent Del Carlo.
Yes.
Vice Chair Dubrava?
Yes.
Chair Geddes?
Aye.
Regent Hayes?
Hey, yes.
Regent McAdoo?
Yes.
Regent McMichael?
Yes.
Regent Moran?
Yes.
Regent Page?
Yes.
Regent Perkins?
Aye.
Regent Trachok?
Yes.
Regent Carter?
Yes.
Passes unanimously, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. We will now go to item number 6, 5-year extension to the master subscription agreement with Workday. CFO Cleaner.
Thank you, Chair Geddes, Chancellor Riley, and Regents. Good morning. Item 6 is an information item related to the 5-year extension of the master service agreement with Workday. This is the master service agreement that runs our human capital system, our payroll system, as well as our financial system. This was an agreement that was originally entered into in January of 2015. And that original agreement was a 5-year agreement with an annual subscription fee of $2.9 million per year. Now, that original agreement was set to expire on April 28th of this year. Now, it did have an automatic renewal in it. However, that automatic renewal was a 4% plus CPI, plus an increase in what's called the full service equivalent workers. And so based on that automatic renewal, we would have been paying $3.9 million per year. So we decided to renegotiate that renewal, and Workday has agreed to a 5-year renewal of that contract. At a $3.29 million annual subscription fee for 5 years. Now, that does include a 10% increase in the full service equivalent workers, which is how they base their licensing. If you compare the renegotiated rate of $3.29 million, to the original renewal rate over the 5-year period, it's a $3.6 million savings compared to what was in the automatic renewal. Now, if you adjust that for two of the modules that we didn't include in the new renewal, it's still a $1.7 million savings over that automatic renewal. Now, the cost for the Workday subscription will be cost allocated out to the various institutions. And the way that will be done is, and this is something that the business officers have discussed and agreed to, is it will be based on a weighting of FTEs at each institution plus operating expenses at each institution. So their proportionate share of those two factors will determine how much each institution pays in their share of it. The other thing I should note is that the way we structured this agreement is the first payment was made this April, and it was actually made for 14 months, which means for next fiscal year, we actually don't have a payment. So the next payment doesn't come up until fiscal year 22. And so with that, Mr. Chairman, Board, I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Regent Hayes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Have a couple of concerns about this. I talked to Chancellor Riley and to CFO Klinger about it. The first one is that this is an information-only item. Both the Chancellor and CFO Klinger said that legal had said this did not need to come before us for a vote, and I'll trust that that is accurate. But I think we need to change our policies then, because, you know, we've worked really hard on the BFF committee to increase the limits of what has to come for us for approval. And we don't have anything in BFF that allows us to approve property purchases, leases, selling of items that the campuses own. for a $3 million a year expense without it coming before the board. I think, you know, this is overall a $16.5 million expense that I guess we should feel thankful that staff brought to us so we knew it was happening. I mean, this is something that the board should look at and approve. I'm okay with it as is, but that doesn't mean every regent would be, and I think something that's this big of an expense should come before the board. So I don't know what policies we need to change on that, but I'd ask that the General Counsel Reynolds take a look at that and maybe bring something forward to us. The other concern I have that I talked to CFO Klinger about, you know, there's a whole lot that went into us switching to Workday and a whole lot of benefits to it. But one of them that was talked about was that we'd have better reporting and better data analysis capabilities, and we're removing that. And talking to CFO Klinger, he said it was an underutilized or almost unutilized portion of what we had with Workday currently. The campuses weren't using it, but at what was initially estimated at 200,000 to remove data analytics and some other things, it seems like a rather small expense to have the data analytics capability across all 8 campuses and the system office. And I would like to know, maybe at a future date, how much the data analytics that each campus and the system office are doing, at what expense that we could have gotten for less than $200,000 on this. It seems like we are probably spending more money elsewhere, and we wouldn't be able to get consistent reporting the way we could through one system in Workday. So I think that's something we should look at adding back in the future. You know, I don't know why it hasn't been used in the past. I know that the rollout for Workday was tough and we were under the gun and there were some glitches, but I think the data analytics portion is an important part of it, and it doesn't seem like an overly expensive part. So if we could look at adding that back and look at how this slips through and is not something that needs board approval, and maybe fixing that if the rest of the regents agree, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Regent Hayes. We will add review of that policy we'll consider that a new business request and assign it to Mr. Reynolds. I have Regent Page, then Perkins, then Carter. Regent Page.
Thank you, Chair Geddes. I want to thank CFO Klinger and the Chancellor for negotiating this contract. There was a previous CFO that was ready just to sign the contract. And so it gets back to Regent Hayes's comment that I really think it needs to come to the board going forward, and looking at the policy makes a lot of sense. But, you know, remember when a lot of people won't remember, but I remember when we did the initial contract, we had Renee Yucara negotiated for us, and we saved $6 million, real dollars of what they wanted more than what we saved. So, not sharpening on pencil on these is a huge financial impact. So it's much appreciated they did that. And I just want to reiterate, I think going forward, they need to come to us. Thanks.
Thank you, Regent Page. I have Regent Perkins, Carter, then Carvalho. Regent Perkins.
First, I want to say thank you for all the work that Andrew Klinger put into it. And I really appreciate the savings negotiation. What were the deliverables that made it that this contract came before for renewal? Did Workday actually perform the way we thought it would? Was there a percentage increase, percentage decrease on the information that was supposed to be accomplished by using Workday?
So, yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair Geddes, to Regent Perkins. So this was part of, so again, going back, so originally we signed a 5-year agreement, and this is what's referred to as an ERP system. So it's a system that covers our human resource capital, our payroll, our financial system. So it really encompasses all of that. And this was just the renewal period that we were in. I would say, you know, to some of the other comments, I mean, we've certainly had some adjustments that we've had to go through in implementing this. We really weren't in a position, you know, to change software. It's such a major undertaking to go out and implement this kind of software. I should also mention we're in the process of doing what we're calling a Workday alignment project. Because as some of the other regions have alluded to, there's some things in the system that we need to adjust and make sure that we're using the system in the most efficient way that we can. And that we're getting all, you know, everything out of the system that we can for what we're paying. And so we're doing a, what we're calling a workday alignment project to go out and make sure that there's consistency in how we're using the system. And we're leveraging campus resources where we can, as well.
Thank you. And, I do agree with, my counterparts that we need to, this, for this amount of money, it definitely needs to come before the board.
Thank you. I have Regent Carter, then Carvalho, then Del Carlo. Regent Carter.
A couple questions. The first one is about the data analysis, just like Regent Hayes. I'm a little concerned about removing it unless we have another alternative. I'm not sure if you've talked to Mr. Sunbury. I guess I should have before that about compliance and auditing. That seems like a function that was kind of sold to us as a benefit, as being able to look at the back room and see what all the institutions are doing and be able to run all these reports at the system level really easy, and they look the same and all that kind of stuff. I'm a little concerned about removing data analysis and would ask maybe we think about adding that back in. The second question, down here we have $1.265 million going to SPS. Where does that money come from and what does that money paying for?
If I'm clear.
Yes, Chair Geddes to Regent Carter. So the $1.26 million is actually a transfer from system computing. So it's essentially their contribution to part of the licensing. So in other words, there are some additional operating costs that are built into when you look at that cost allocation that goes out to the institutions. So that includes not only licensing costs for Workday, there are some other licensing costs in there. For example, our single sign-on Okta, there's some licensing for that. There's also some personnel costs in that. And so the 1.265, that is system computing services contribution to that overall cost. So it actually brings the cost down.
Okay. And that comes from their just standard budget?
Yep, that comes from their state operating budget. That's correct.
Okay. Very good. Thank you.
Thank you. Regent Carvalho.
Thank you. Two things. One, I want to echo what others have said, that a multi-year service agreement of this magnitude probably is something that should have board approval. So I'm in favor of that. Second, I had a conversation with CFO Klinger about the data analytics, and I was wondering if maybe you could share with the broader group what your intention is on how you're going to answer that question regarding the Workday analytics. I think that would be a good comment for you to make at this time.
Thank you, Chair Geddes, to Regent Carvalho. Appreciate the question. So we did not include that in the original licensing agreement simply because we have not been utilizing that module, if you will, of the system. And we have been working, the business officers have been working on getting that implemented. And so in discussions with the business officers and in discussions with Workday, this is a module that we can come back and add back into the system. So didn't want to continue to pay for it while we weren't using it, but fully intend to look at this and alternatives as well. I don't want to say we're not looking at alternatives, but look at this as well as alternatives for the data analytics piece and put that back in. And if it happens to be Workday that we utilize to perform that function, then we would come back and add that piece in. And we certainly can do that under this agreement.
Thank you. Regent Del Carlo.
Thank you, Chair Geddes. This is a really informative discussion, so I appreciate all that. I do agree that this should come back for board approval, the amount. And I wasn't on the board, but I was watching the meetings then and remember the savings when we did get Workday. And we all know, anybody that's worked in a big organization, how extremely difficult and complicated changing systems are. And we talked on the board and had some presentations follow up for Workday, and I'd like to see that incorporated in the future to see if all those things have been resolved by now. So I think that's important to do that. And I'm really pleased to hear, CFO Klinger, that you're doing this alignment project with Workday. And it really helps, to, as you said, to leverage. And this is the beauty of having one system where all eight institutions are all joined together. And I think it definitely is time to go back and pick up that analytics piece. I agree with you, Chair Hayes, that $200,000, my gosh, for the analytics. And if that alignment project could tie the analytics into our five strategic goals, if that's all part of it too, just because it is the data. We are a data-driven system, and the more data we can have, the better decisions, those tough decisions, as Regent McAdoo said, helps all of us. So this has been a good discussion, and I see a lot of good things going forward. So thank you.
Thank you. I'm seeing no other comments. That was an info item. We'll go to item number 7, new business. I think that previous item made it clear we're going to have a new business item to look at the policy surrounding this. And so we'll have Mr. Reynolds work on that. Is there any other new business? Not seeing any. We will move on to item number 8, public comment. Before I do, I do want to say thank you to Danny and SES, as well as Carrie, Angela, and Winter. These meetings have gotten much smoother and much easier, and we're all learning everything, and there is a lot of staff effort behind the scenes of all of this to make sure it all works well for us, and I do truly appreciate the way that they've all stepped up and done that. Regent Carter?
I had a new business thing, if you don't mind going back to that item.
Yeah, no, that's a fine.
So I'm just thinking for the rest of the year, maybe we could try to plan or at least have a conversation about having our meetings not traveling to different locations to save both money for the institutions and for us as regents, whether that's something that we can just do or whether we need to have a conversation about that. I think that's something that we could probably do through our January meeting.
Okay. I agree. These are starting to work very well. I think we'll try that hybrid in June, and then maybe on the June 18th, we could put that on for discussion and see where it goes. Regent Carvalho.
Thank you, Chair Geddes. This isn't new business. This is just a comment, if that's okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Depends what it is.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, it depends what it is, please.
Okay, I just wanted to echo what Regent McAdoo said, that students always come first. Faculty and staff at our institutions are very important, and I just want those on the call to know that furloughs are not something that are taken lightly, and I just wanted to echo what Regent McAdoo said. We all feel the impact of this, and I want you all to know that you have at least my support. I'm sorry, Dean. I see you shaking your head.
Well, I don't want to open this up for everyone to start making comments
because we're
past the agenda.
I'm sorry.
I don't mean to be harsh, but I have to be.
No, you're right. You're right.
Here. Thank you.
Thank you. Now we'll move to public comment. Mr. Gold, we have one.
We do. You have to bear with me because I have to do it from my phone and I have to find it now. So I'm going to read it from the phone. This came in during the meeting, and while we technically indicated in our agenda that those would just go in the record, since we did get it in and I have time to find it, I'm going to read it in with your permission. This came from Adrian Havas, H-A-V-A-S. He says, good morning. My name is Adrian Havas, and I am professor at CSN North Las Vegas and president of the Nevada Faculty Alliance. I wish to briefly address new proposed NSHE code language that would allow emergency COVID-19 furloughs on short notice and without the normal safeguards for faculty employment and tenure rights. This item is being considered today during this special regents meeting. I urge you to remove or at least limit the scope of this language, as it amounts to a severe overreach, even for a budget emergency in which the state of Nevada now finds itself due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Thanks for your attention today, and I sincerely hope the board and Chancellor Riley do the right thing by reining in this rather ill-conceived proposal. That's the only other public comment that I received, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gould. Having no other public comment, we will see you all on June 11th and 12th. Stay safe, stay healthy, enjoy your families, enjoy the beautiful weather that started, and we are adjourned.